Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Friday, March 4th. Gas prices spiked 16 cents in 1 week. Russia's invasion of Ukraine creates heightened volatility in oil markets, by Stuart Doreen. Midland is in the midst of a gas price spike. AAA Texas reported that the latest spike started taking place in the last week as the average price for a gallon of regular unleaded increased 16 cents over the week. The $3.48 a gallon average in Midland is the third highest across the state, is 10 cents higher than the state average, and is 5 cents higher than the average in Odessa. The record average price in Midland is $4.04, set in July 2008. While the average has increased in Midland over the past week, the price of oil has also climbed. Wednesday, that price reached $112 in after-hours trading. Oil prices have skyrocketed to 11-year highs due to the volatility in global crude markets caused by Russia's invasion of Ukraine, said AAA Texas spokesperson Daniel Armbruster in the organization's weekly report. Demand for gasoline will only increase as spring approaches and more people travel. Couple that with rising crude oil prices, and drivers can expect to continue to see even higher fuel prices in the days and weeks ahead. The statewide gas price average has not been as high as $3.38 since August 2014, according to AAA Texas. Statewide, the largest 27 metropolitan areas showed week-over-week increases from 8 cents to 27 cents. The average increase statewide was 17 cents. Nationally, the average increase was 19 cents to $3.73. Amarillo again posted the lowest average of the larger metropolitan areas across the state, $3.24, 18 cents higher than last week. Other averages across the region included $3.26 in Lubbock, an increase of 15 cents, $3.33 in San Angelo, an increase of 12 cents, $3.49 in Abilene, an increase of 15 cents, and $3.43 in Odessa, an increase of 17 cents. The highest average in Texas was $3.58 in El Paso, followed by the $3.49 average in Abilene. 1 year ago, the average in Midland was $2.68. The average across the state last year was $2.46. YWLA unveils new STEM center. The Young Women's Leadership Academy unveiled its new STEM Center on Thursday morning. XTO Energy, Diamondback Energy, and the Cal Ripken Senior Foundation teamed up to provide YWLA students with high-tech equipment. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, while women are nearly half of the workforce, they are still vastly underrepresented in the STEM workforce, making up only 27% of all STEM workers, according to a news release. STEM receives special emphasis at YWLA, inspiring an interest in science and engineering at a young age. The new STEM center features cutting-edge tools like a 3D printer, little bits, and snap circuits, which help budding young scientists and engineers practice critical thinking skills, solve complex problems collaboratively, and expand their horizons. APIs Myers, World in Need of More LNG, by Mella McEwen. Energy markets, already rattled by the pandemic, rebounding oil and gas demand, and tightening oil and gas supplies, have been thrown into further turmoil by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Europe, particularly, is in a precarious position amid the invasion, said Dustin Myers, Vice President, Natural Gas Markets with the American Petroleum Institute. Participating in a media call to discuss the domestic industry's role in supporting energy security in the U.S. and globally, Myers noted that in Europe, spot natural gas prices have soared to $60 per MMBTU, or the equivalent of $340 for a barrel of oil. In Asia, prices have risen to $40 per MMBTU. Myers pointed out that European gas markets had been tight before the invasion. Clearly, the market is sending a strong signal: the world needs more natural gas. That call has become even more urgent. The U.S. is the world's largest producer of natural gas and largest exporter of liquefied natural gas, shipping 100 cargoes of LNG a month, mostly to Europe. Frank Macchiarola, API's Senior Vice President, Policy, Economics, and Regulatory Affairs, said the association supports the administration's release of oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve earlier this week, in conjunction with other nations. He said the SPR was designed for international crises like the invasion. The invasion, he said, underscored the point the API and others have been making that the surge in U.S. oil and natural gas production, particularly in the Permian Basin, has provided the nation with energy security and helped the energy security of American allies while helping lower prices at home. But long-term, he said, U.S. energy leadership will be needed, and he called on the Biden administration to recognize the role of U.S. energy, specifically LNG, as Europe looks to the U.S. for its energy. The administration must recognize the role of LNG, but also back that with action to allow expansion of exports, he said. The Department of Energy and Federal Energy Regulatory Commission must act on applications for LNG export facilities pending before them and also establish a clear timeline for approval. Ukraine, said Myers, will fundamentally alter Europe's energy markets. Already, he said, Germany is fast-tracking two LNG import facilities, and the International Energy Agency is falling more imports of U.S. LNG to diversify European sources away from Russia. We believe it's imperative President Biden reassure our allies the U.S. will be a reliable supplier of energy, Myers stated. Question and answer. What to know about MCUD's role in county's water delivery? By Stuart Doreen. Things to know about the Midland County Utility District. The topic of water delivery to residents inside the county has come up during county election campaigns and even during the most recent Midland City Council planning session. When the delivery of water is discussed, it often leads to a district created to ultimately provide water for those residents. It's called the Midland County Utility District, or MCUD. Here are some things to know about the Midland County Utility District, offered in a question and answer with MCUD's Shelton Viney. MRT. What is the Midland County Utility District? MCUD. The Midland County Utility District, MCUD, is a special law district created under Section 59, Article 16, Texas Constitution, and confirmed by voters of the district in May 2013. The MCUD service area consists of approximately 84.5 square miles of land in Midland County, just south and east of Midland city limits. The district is governed by a 5-member board of directors elected under Section 49.102 of the State Water Code. Its mission is to provide dependable, safe drinking water to the residents of the district. The population within the district is estimated at approximately 40,000 people. The district provides an affordable place to live for many of the community's residents and workforce population. These residents and the many businesses in the district contribute to the overall success of the Midland community. Don't these homes depend on groundwater? Over the past 8 years, local groundwater wells in the district have become less reliable, resulting in many residents and businesses not having safe drinking water. Numerous residents are now regularly hauling water and storing it for use in their homes or businesses because their wells have run dry. Several locations within the district have had their groundwater sources contaminated. These areas are under regulation from the Environmental Protection Agency, requiring water to be filtered and/or treated before it is suitable to drink or can be used in the home. Are there other government entities involved? The district is grateful that the county and the city have expressed their concern for the lack of reliable drinking water within the district and have been cooperatively participating in developing a long-term solution for the good of the overall Midland community. The district board believes that a win-win solution is possible between the three entities that not only would benefit the residents within the district, but also all Midland residents living in the city limits and within the county. In 2014, the groundwater resources within Midland County were evaluated, and it was determined that there is not enough reliable groundwater within the county to sustain the population growth and increasing demand for water throughout the county. Therefore, the county studied potential water sources in the region and ultimately decided to purchase groundwater rights in Winkler County, approximately 12 miles away from the city of Midland's T-Bar well field. With this purchase, the county commissioners stated that it was their hope that this additional groundwater would eventually be made available to all the residents in the county, including those living inside and outside the city limits. How can the city factor in the delivery of water to county residents? The county and the city have continued to discuss the best way to utilize the community's valuable water sources. It has been determined that the best use of the county's water in Winkler County is to combine it with the city's water resources in Winkler County. By combining the county's water source in Winkler County with the city of Midlands, the available water for the city is increased by approximately 50% from a projected supply of 40 years to 60 years. With the city's utility department controlling the county's water supply in Winkler County, the production and transportation of the water to Midland can be done most efficiently and effectively. In return, the city will begin to provide wholesale water to the district from the city's supply provided by the Colorado River Municipal Water District. The city has determined two locations within their existing water distribution system and one additional location within the city's future system that can be tapped by the Midland County Utility District as wholesale delivery points within the county. This will provide a reliable, safe source for drinking water within the district. Once water is set up, what's the next step? With a source of reliable drinking water established, the Midland County Utility District is now able to begin development of a potable water utility system for its residents. The development of the system will be prioritized for the residents with the greatest need for water, receiving services first and ultimately all district residents having access to a reliable, safe drinking water system. The district will pursue all avenues of funding available for the development of the utility system. There are funding programs available through state and federal agencies for the areas with contamination. The district also will apply for other state and federal funds for other areas within the district that may qualify for specific programs. How will county residents be impacted financially? After all grant and assistance funding has been evaluated, the district will consider funding infrastructure development from users' fees. The district will seek input from its residents before setting rates for purchase of drinking water. It is the intent of the district to provide drinking water to its residents at a rate that is affordable to them, while covering the operation and maintenance costs of the system. It is possible that the rates could also cover the cost of necessary installation of tanks, pump stations, piping, meters, etc. Finally, after all other funding mechanisms have been fully vetted, the district may ask the voters, within the district to approve the issuance of bonds at an election, which would increase property taxes if approved. The district will continue to study all the financing options available to it to determine the best plan for funding the improvements needed to provide a reliable water supply to the community, before the district asks the residents to approve any proposed bond program. However, the district wants to assure its residents that no bond program will be pursued without significant opportunity to receive input from its residents. Again, the district is grateful for the spirit of cooperation and assistance in getting to this point from the county and the city. The entire community will benefit from these efforts by ensuring all the community's residents have safe and reliable drinking water for generations to come. MC Art Department Celebrates Anniversary by J.C. Lewis. Midland College is celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Art Department with an exhibit featuring retired and former art faculty. The exhibit features 9 retired and former art faculty members. Pieces of artwork range from printmaking and drawings to ceramics and sculptures. Artists include Carol Bailey, Jane Becker, Sarah Gilstrap, John Harmon, Stan Jacobs, Karen Lanier, Kent Moss, Susan Randall, and Warren Taylor. Lanier was a journalism and photography lab instructor for almost 20 years, she said. The photography lab fell under the art area, not just journalism, Lanier said. I got to work in the art hall and know all the art teachers, while also taking art classes. She then started doing more printmaking than photography over the years. She said she never got an art degree from anywhere, while the other artists featured in the exhibit have art degrees. Lanier said she has been retired for about 9 years now. She added that it is great to be included in the exhibit because she comes from a different background. I continue to take classes at MC, so I'm in this building every other day, she said. I still take printmaking from Dagan Sherman for fun. Randall said the exhibit opening was exciting because the artists were able to reconnect with old friends, colleagues, and former students, as well as other people's work. She works in drawing and printmaking. She left MC about 10 years ago, but she taught for 20 years at the institution. It's a magical place, Randall said. There is something about this environment and the support for the art in the college. The facilities, faculty, and students are simply wonderful. She added that she wishes she didn't live in Austin now so that she could take classes at MC. Bailey's art features ceramics and sculpture at the show. She left MC about 9 years ago and taught for about 21 years. She said that MC's art department is a unique place. There aren't many places like this, she said. I had students who moved on somewhere else and said they could never find a place like the art department of Midland College. A welcoming place to learn and take classes or workshops. The exhibit runs through April 8th at the Allison Fine Arts Building, McCormick Gallery, located at 3600 North Garfield Street. The gallery is open 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Thursday, and 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Friday. The gallery will be closed the week of spring break, March 7th through the 11th. Deputy involved in shooting. A Midland County Sheriff's Office deputy was involved in a shooting around 2:20 a.m. Thursday. The shooting occurred at the Sandstone Ridge Apartments in Midland. The suspect was transported to Midland Memorial Hospital, where he later died. A press release stated, the suspect did not have a state-issued identification card or driver's license on his person at the time of the shooting, and investigators are working to make a positive ID. The Midland County Sheriff's deputy who was involved in the shooting is without injury and has been placed on administrative leave pending further investigation, according to DPS. No residents at the Sandstone Ridge Apartments were injured. The investigation has now been turned over to the Texas Rangers. The shooting is being investigated by the Texas Rangers. Obituaries and death notices from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Friday. Saul Ramirez Gamboa, Sr., 60, of Midland, passed away on February 28th, surrounded by family. Viewing and visitation will be held on Sunday, March 6th, from 1 to 9 p.m. at the branch at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held on Monday, March 7th at 10 a.m., also at the branch at NPW. Interment will follow at Fairview Cemetery. Saul Ramirez Gamboa Sr. was born on November 18, 1961, in Midland to Cruz and Christina Gamboa. Saul is survived by his wife Joanne, son Saul Jr. and wife Tinsley, son Nick and wife Angelica, son Alex and wife Laura, three grandchildren. He is also survived by his father, brother Ramon Gamboa, and sister Gabriela Franco. He is preceded in death by his mother and brothers Blas and Eddie Gamboa. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Amelia Chavez, 64, of Midland, passed away on Wednesday, March 2nd, surrounded by her family. A rosary will be held at 7 p.m. Monday, March 7th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, March 8th, at Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens.
This is Reed, and this is the Odessa American for Friday. The Texas Court of Criminal Appeals has issued a stay of execution for Michael Dean Gonzalez, who had been scheduled to die by lethal injection Tuesday in the April 1994 deaths of Manuel and Merced Aguirre. Joshua Freeman, assistant federal public defender, said he received notice of the stay telephonically Thursday afternoon. Authorities believe Gonzalez stabbed the Aguirres to death after they woke up to find Gonzalez, their neighbor, burglarizing their home on April 22, 1994. He was convicted and sentenced to death in December 1995. He was sentenced to death again in 2009. Last week, federal public defenders asked Ector County District Court Judge John Schrode, saying they have new evidence they believe could prove Gonzalez didn't kill the elderly couple. They also alleged he shouldn't be executed because he is, quote, intellectually disabled, and the state, quote, knowingly elicited, end quote, false testimony, and the prosecution suppressed evidence that could have cast doubt on Gonzalez's. The Court of Appeals ruled that Schrode needs to look into the matter of Gonzalez's intellectual disability and the allegation that the prosecution suppressed evidence. Defense attorney Richard Burr said they believe in an Odessa man who was interviewed following the couple's slaying as the actual killer. On late Wednesday afternoon, he filed a motion requesting DNA tests to prove that man's guilt. Burr contends in court documents that the alternative suspect was interviewed after the observed a cut on his left arm, never charged, and prosecutors contended at Gonzalez's trial he acted alone. Bloodstain experts believe recently discovered stains inside a flannel shirt found in the alternative suspect's closet after the deaths could belong to the alternative suspect. Blood on the outside of the shirt has already been matched to the Aguirres. Bloodstain experts believe blood drops found on tile in the Aguirres' house and on Merced Aguirres' housecoat likely came from the killer and theoretically could be linked to the alternative suspect. When told by a defense investigator in October 2021, that blood found inside the house did not match the Aguirres or Gonzalez, the alternative suspect replied, quote, that blood is probably mine. In August 2021, a new witness told a defense investigator the alternative suspect confessed to murdering Merced Aguirre, but he hadn't come forward because he, quote, was too concerned, end quote. Plus, he'd spent several years in state and federal prison. Burr also states in court documents that Odessa Police Department Crime Scene Unit Supervisor Stephanie Bothwell recently found 136 latent fingerprint cards in a storage box. They are prints that were collected from victim's home for comparison purposes. The attorneys wrote it will take months to compare the fingerprints to other known fingerprints. Burr is also asking for additional DNA testing to be done. Richard Aguirre, the second oldest of the Aguirres' four sons, said he was, quote, very, very disappointed. Quote, I'm very sad it was stayed, and I hope it doesn't take another couple of years, end quote, to walk through the appeals, Aguirre said. Gonzalez is currently the only person convicted by an Ector County jury on death row. Crane. At the end of the year, Daniel Todd will wrap up 29 years directing bands at Crane ISD. Todd is head band director for Crane High School and has devoted himself to it. Along the way, the band has racked up many honors and awards. Todd is the first to give all the credit to his students. Quote, I am incredibly proud of all these bands, but what means the most to me is the love, respect, and relationships that I have had with thousands of Crane band students, past and present. I am so blessed to have had the community and school district of Crane take in my family and I and treat us well for so long. My band students have been a true blessing that will never be forgotten, End quote. High school band director Sarah Hill will step in as head band director after Todd departs. She previously worked for Todd for 9 years and knows the program. Quote, it was an absolute blessing to have spent 9 years teaching with such a passionate and dedicated mentor, friend, and colleague as Daniel Todd. He has made a huge impact on me, on the Crane community, and the people in it, Hill said in a text message. Quote, I can truthfully say that this man is dearly loved by so many. What an inspiration he has been to students, to fellow teachers, and to those who aspire to bring out the best in others. End quote. Todd said it was weight off his shoulders knowing that Hill will be taking over. Quote, I feel incredibly confident that Crane Band is in wonderful hands with Sarah Hill. And Todd said he has put in, quote, some crazy hours, end quote, and he is slowing down a little bit. Quote, I don't want to be the weak link here. I love this program. It's the only program I've known. I bleed purple and gold, and I always will. He added that he has had some health issues. He had a heart attack and quadruple bypass surgery. Quote, I've had 3 neck surgeries, end quote, Todd said. Quote, really, what I want to focus on is being a father and a husband, which I don't feel like I've been able to do that to the best of my ability. The hours I've put in over the last 29 years have been very intense. I've been very fortunate that my wife did stay home with the kids for 12 years. She was actually the elementary music teacher for 12 years, and then she took off 12 years to raise our children. And now she's back, and she's teaching kindergarten at the elementary. Because of those 12 years, she can't retire. She's going to keep teaching. She loves her job. End quote. He was hired as the assistant band director for Crane High School his first year, and then took over as middle school band director for the next 9 years, and head high school band director after that. Quote, I was fresh out of college. This is my first and only job. I joke that not many coaches or band directors are in the same place their whole career. I've been very, very blessed to stumble upon this place and lucky enough to get hired here. End quote, Todd said. He oversees all the band directors. Quote, we team teach everything here. We're all in every single band class, but I am the head of music here. End quote. There are currently 135 members in the high school band, 95 in the middle school band, and about 60 sixth graders. Originally from New Mexico, Todd went to New Mexico State University in Las Cruces, taking a bachelor's degree in music education. He started off as a finance major in college, but he figured out that no amount of money, unless he was doing something he loved. He switched his major to music. Todd grew up mostly in Las Cruces and Albuquerque. He and his wife, Deborah, have 2 children. His daughter, Bethany, who they adopted when she was 3 days old, is a junior, and his son, Braden, is in 5th grade. The Todds have also informally adopted a former drum major who is now an instrumental aide in Crane, named Dominic Rivas. Todd said he and his family plan to stay in Crane. He noted that Crane High School band program has only had 3 directors and made it an incredible program. Jesse Lotspeech hired Todd and was his mentor for 9 years. When Lotspeech retired, Todd took over for him. Quote, it's been really vital for the success is that we haven't had a ton of turnover. We haven't gone through head director after head director after head director like a lot of programs do, end quote, Todd said. Played football and trombone in band. The band directors and coaches believed in him, spurring him on to finish high school and go to college. Quote, I wanted to be for some kids what my directors and coaches were for me, end quote. In some districts, students have to choose the events they participate in, but Crane lets them do all the activities they want, which Todd really appreciates. He had to choose between football and band when he was in high school. Quote, a couple of years ago, I had 22 varsity football players in my band program, end quote. He, quote, I've never heard of it. I used to joke that we could field a band team out there. He added that he is going to miss the district when he retires as of June 30th, but he plans on staying involved. Quote, I'm going to be involved with music. I plan on judging. I plan on clinicking, maybe do some contract teaching for different schools. I really love going to different schools and helping out other programs. I've done quite a bit of that in my career. I plan on continuing to do that, Todd said. Bond election coming up. Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray reminded the community Proposition A for $215,255,000. This includes various projects for electrical, mechanical, plumbing, and others at schools and auxiliary buildings. This would include classroom and lab space for programs like welding, construction, health, automation, and process technology, 1,000 square feet, and include furniture, fixtures. Proposition B for 2,500 to 2,800 students with about 400,000 square feet. It would also include furniture, fixtures, and equipment. Quote, we want to make sure that everybody is really clear. The election that occurred this week was not the bond election. There were a lot of other things on the ballot, but the bond was not. And, quote, the election will occur on Saturday, the 7th of May. Early voting for that will begin on April 25th. He added that the district does not determine the date of the election. That is up to the state of Texas and the local elections office. Murray also recapped the opening of the new district wellness center at employees currently on school district insurance. Quote, this is a free clinic that will take care of those insured employees as well as their family members. They provide the typical medical services that you would find in any medical clinic around our community. We have a full-time doctor on staff, a nurse practitioner on staff, as well as three other nurses that provide care for that visit. End quote, Murray said. It will also provide mental health care. He added that it opened February 28th at noon and is already beginning to see its first patients. Quote, we don't often hear the word free and healthcare in the same sentence, but in this case, ECISD employees have an opportunity to receive free medical care through the insurance provider that we partner with as a school system. On a separate note, Murray said he will be on two separate panels at the South by Southwest Festival in Austin next week. One panel is about how rural school districts such as ECISD are being innovative around tech. Said they are going to showcase new technology and George H.W. Bush, New Tech Odessa. Quote, but more broadly, how does a school system rural setting? So that's kind of the focus of that first panel, end quote, Murray said. Quote, the second one is with a group of my colleagues from Chiefs for Change. We're talking very specifically about broadband. Each of the superintendents will tell stories of things happening in their community. From our perspective, it will be talking about our partnership with SpaceX and then talking about the work of the ConEctor Task Force to bring high-speed, affordable broadband to our community. End quote. Innovation doesn't always have to be technology, he said. It is, quote, much more divergent thinking. Thinking differently about how to solve the world's problems, which start as small problems in our own local community and can magnify beyond that. But creative and unique ways of addressing the challenge that we face, and certainly as a school system throughout the pandemic and other times, we've been pretty innovative in some of the solutions that we're providing to address the challenges that we face locally, end quote, Murray said. West Texas hosting Pets in Need Clinic. Fix West Texas will be having its Pets in Need Clinic March 5th through 6th. The clinic will run from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. both days, with the March 5th clinic taking place at the Ector County Coliseum parking lot on the west side near the Permian Playhouse, while the March 6th clinic will be at the Reyes Mashburn Nelms Park, located at 2101 Cuthbert Avenue in Midland. A drive-through clinic will also take place at both clinics with pay-what-you-can vaccinations and microchips. Free dog and cat food will also be given away. Pay-what-you-can and neuter vouchers will be available to dogs who weigh more than 15 pounds. Visit https://fixwesttexas.org/ for more information or to book an appointment. Empty Bowls starting at 11 a.m. Sunday of Texas Permian Basin. Doors will open at 11 a.m. The event will run until 2 p.m. University of Texas Permian Basin, Ector County ISD, Trinity School of Midland, and with the help of POTS, a news release stated. The release detailed the food bank is grateful for the involvement of Odessa Arts and the Midland Arts. Entry to the event is $15 and includes a pick of a handmade bowl and soups provided by the Garlic Press, Murray's Deli, and Catfish & Company. Sponsor tables for 8 are available for $500, limited availability. Public parking is available in the Devonian and Library parking lots. Please enter through Breezeway between the Library and Mesa buildings. Access will not be available through the Mesa building. Quote, we are so blessed to continue to have the support of the arts community, end quote, said Libby Campbell, CEO of the West Texas Food Bank. Quote, Empty Bowls is a fun and family-friendly event that is open to everyone. I am so grateful for all the support over the years, and I look forward to a great event this year, end quote. HEB is underwriting the event, which will allow 100% of the proceeds to be donated to the West Texas Food Bank. Don't Mess with Texas launches reusable bag art contest for K-12 students. Deadline to submit artwork is March 25th. Young Texans will get a chance to create the latest design for the official reusable bag for the iconic Don't Mess with Texas campaign, a Texas Department of Transportation press release stated. New in 2022, the Don't Mess with Texas Reusable Bag Art Contest is aimed at inspiring younger generations of Texans to keep their home state litter-free. Texas students, grades K through 12, are invited to create original artwork that embodies and promotes the Don't Mess with Texas anti-litter message. The winning design will be featured on reusable bags distributed at events across Texas. Quote, teaching children about the harmful effects of litter on the environment is an important life lesson that will follow them into adulthood and can have a long-lasting effect on our state, end quote. Becky Ozuna, program administrator for the Don't Mess with Texas campaign, stated in the press release. To enter the Don't Mess with Texas reusable bag art contest, artwork must be a hand-drawn, two-dimensional original artwork by a student in grades K through 12 in a public, private, charter, or home school. To upload or mail an entry, visit don'tmesswithtexas.org. Applications must be received via online submission or postmarked by 5 p.m. March 25th. One grand prize winner and three runner-ups will see their artwork featured on Don't Mess with Texas reusable bags. The grand prize winner will also receive a $100 HEB gift card and an exclusive and branded Don't Mess with Texas trash barrel for their school campus. All student winners will also receive a prize pack of Don't Mess with Texas branded merchandise. Additionally, one selected classroom teacher from each of the four student winners will receive a $100 HEB gift card. Don't Mess with Texas has been educating Texans about litter prevention since 1986. The program includes a grassroots partnership with Keep Texas Beautiful, annual Trash Off community outreach events, and the Adopt a Highway Volunteer program. New date set for community mural painting. Nessa Arts and Black Tulip Floral Design will be hosting a community mural painting day from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Friday at Black Tulip Floral Design, located at 4651 North Grandview Avenue. Quote, Black Tulip is the first recipient of a mural assistance grant, end quote. Odessa Arts Executive Director Randy Hamm stated in a press release. Quote, this program helps local businesses select and hire artists to create unique pieces for their buildings, making their community brighter. Cuban-born artist Jonathan Arango was selected out of 81 applicants to create the design for Black Tulip and has been working on the piece for over a week. Arango will assist community members in making their own mark on the piece. Quote, I think it's important to have the people of Odessa feel like they are a part of the process, end quote, Arango stated in the press release. Quote, it establishes a feeling of ownership and community pride, end quote. The event will also feature food trucks. Obituaries. Vicki Lynette Jones, Victoria. Vicki Lynette Jones went to be with our Lord and Savior on January 29, 2022 in Victoria, Texas, 1949 in San Antonio, Texas, to Victor and Kathleen Sutton. Vicki was preceded in death by her mother, Sister Marcy Messias, her father, brother Alec Sutton, and brother Jim Sutton. She is survived by her husband, Jimmy Jones, her sister Laura Wilkes Richard of Aledo, Texas, her brother Keith Sutton, Becky of Benbrook, Texas, her children Don Craig Jones of Springdale, Arkansas, Monica Odell, Danny of Sanger, Texas, Childers Mark of Waco, Texas, Hallie Clough Sam of Schertz, Texas, Jamie Huff Cedric of Victoria, Texas, 12 grandchildren and one great-grandson. A memorial service will be on Saturday, March 5th, 2022 at 10 a.m. at Grace Funeral Home at 2401 Houston Highway, Victoria, Texas, 77901. Thoughts and memories may be shared online at www.gracefuneralhome.net. Ronnie Plummer, Canton, Georgia. Ronnie Plummer, 65, of Canton, Georgia, passed away at his home surrounded by family on February 22, 2022. Ronnie is survived by his wife, Susan Plummer, children Jason Plummer, of Phoenix, Arizona, Indy Plummer, and Jacob Plummer of Canton, Georgia. Ronnie has four wonderful grandchildren, Joshua and Lily Varnador, Ryder and Kellen Plummer. Sisters Cindy Brazel of Flower Mound, Texas, Jerry Holder of Midland, Texas, and Sherry Fox of Odessa, of Louisiana. His Graham, Catherine Lewallen, and Nana Diane King, along with numerous aunts, uncles, and the celebration of his life is open for any and all and will be held Saturday, March 5th at 11 o'clock a.m. at Branches of Christ Church, 5946 Jacobs Road, S.E., Ackworth, Georgia. A luncheon will be served immediately following. To honor Ronnie's giving nature, the family asks that you pay it forward and lend a hand to someone in need, whether that be with a kind word, a kind deed, or a monetary donation. Rest in peace, my love. Sosabe Funeral Home, Canton, Georgia, is honored to serve the family. SOSEBEE funeralhome.com 770-479-2131. John Lawrence Sorbers, Odessa, Texas. John Jack Lawrence Sorbers, Jack Sorbers, age 70, passed from this life at Odessa Regional Medicare Center. Jack was born on September 8, 1951. Jack was preceded in death by his father, John L. Sorbers, his grandparents Lawrence and Agnes Sebastian and Augusta Oberding, and brother-in-law Gary Hargrave. He is survived by his mother, Betty Jane Frank of Huntley, Illinois, his wife, Julia L. Sorbers of Odessa, Texas, of Mesa, Arizona, Karen Castor of Magnolia, Texas, son Michael Brager of Fort Worth, Texas, Mike Sorbers of Crystal Lake, Illinois, father-in-law Forrest H. Matthews of Odessa, Texas, in-law Mark and Celia Ray of Temple, Texas. Jack had 7 nieces, 3 nephews, and 8 grandchildren. A memorial service will be held March 5th, 2022 at 10 o'clock a.m. at Frank W. Wilson Funeral Directory. Death Notice, William Ray Mills, Odessa. William Ray Mills, 60, of Odessa, died Monday, March 2nd, 2022 in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, February 28th. Crockett art teacher gets prestigious nod. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. Crockett Middle School's 7th grade art teacher, Priscilla Hernandez, has been busy the last 20 years or so, being a mother and educator. But that hasn't kept her from creating her own work. Hernandez, who finished her Bachelor of Arts with a major in art from the University of Texas Permian Basin, in December 2021, has been selected for the Rising Eyes of Texas in Rockport, an annual juried collegiate exhibition. The exhibit opens March 4th and runs through April 3rd. A reception is scheduled for March 5th. She said she was excited about being chosen for the exhibit. Quote, "It just completely caught me off guard. I wasn't expecting it. When I saw that email, I was speechless," she said. Her entry is a plaster sculpture called Empathy and Courage, and she said it represents what was going on in her life at the time. There are tears on one side of the bust. Hernandez will take her children with her to the opening with the bust securely fastened in for the journey. UTPB Associate Professor of Art Chris Stanley, who taught Hernandez, said she has always possessed amazing talent. Quote, "Having her hard work and creativity acknowledged statewide is a feather in her cap. As she continues her career as a newly degreed teacher, I see only great things for her future," Stanley said in a text message. Quote, "We have such a deep well of talent in the Permian Basin, and it has been my greatest pleasure who have been part of many students' educational journeys. One of the best things about UTPB is our willingness to meet the students where they are and work with them to help them get to where they want to be," he added. Stanley, Hernandez's parents, retired Professor Pam Price, and Crockett principal Maribel Aranda, are among those who encouraged Hernandez to go back to school and finish her college degree. She has 4 children. Hernandez noted that it wouldn't have been possible to go back to school without her parents' help and support. Quote, "My father picked up my 5-year-old every day from school the days I had classes, and they would care for him when I stayed late and on weekends while I was working in the studio. He still does until this day and waits for me at home with him since he gets out at 3:15 from Reagan and I get out at 4:30 from work. I couldn't have gone to school and graduated without their continuing support," she said in a text message. Crockett has hired her on for next year, but Hernandez still has to earn her teacher's certification. Quote, "I truly enjoy going to work every day. Miss Aranda is awesome to work under," Hernandez said. Quote, "Teaching fulfills me," she added. She added that the staff has taken her in as a family member. Quote, "It's just a really good environment," Hernandez said. Her daughter, who is in 6th grade, attends school at Crockett as well, so they go to school together. Making the sculpture was a painstaking process, and now she only has the original. Hernandez has had several offers for it. She also has created ceramic bowls and an aluminum giraffe. Hernandez also paints. Her favorite type of paint is acrylic, and she paints school doors. For example, she's painting a book cover at Reagan for when they bring in Margaret Peterson Haddix in April. Quote, "I like to volunteer and paint. It's relaxing to me," Hernandez said. Genetic link found for sudden unexplained death in children. The story was written by Carol A. Cates, Chief Nursing Officer, Odessa Regional Medical Center. "I love being a nurse except for one thing. Sometimes I know way too much about what can go wrong. For instance, every time my infant grandson spends the night, we have so much fun, but I never sleep well because a little voice in the back of my head worries about sudden infant death syndrome, also known as SIDS. His first birthday is in a little over a month, so I will be very glad when that milestone is behind us, even though the risk is not completely gone. It's just scary that every year in the U.S., we lose infants and children for no reason anyone can explain. After age one, SIDS becomes SUDC, sudden unexplained death in children, and while the risk for SUDC is less than one-third that of SIDS, it is still a risk for children all the way to age 18, though it is most common from ages 1 to 4. The age cutoff is really the only difference between SIDS and SUDC. They are both, quote, diagnoses of exclusion, end quote. In other words, the diagnosis is given when everything else is ruled out. We have learned over the years that SIDS and SUDC can be related to carbon dioxide trapping during sleep, which has led to keeping cribs free of soft objects like bumpers, blankets, and pillows, and having babies sleep on their backs. There is also a possible link to seizures and epilepsy with SIDS and SUDC. But there is still more we don't know than we do know when it comes to SIDS and SUDC. About 1,400 children die each year in the U.S. of SIDS and another 400 of SUDC, despite all we have learned. This is why the research on SUDC that shows a genetic link is so exciting. A team of researchers in New York University's Langone's Comprehensive Epilepsy Center found there was a link between SUDC, epilepsy, and sudden cardiac death when they combined the results of hundreds of past studies. Because of that link, this research team focused on examining 137 specific genes that are related to cardiac arrhythmias and epilepsy. They found that children who died from SUDC had 10 times the number of genetic abnormalities in those genes than those of normal children. Those mutated genes seem to be mostly in those that control how calcium channels function in brain and heart muscle cells. Normally, when cells receive a specific signal to transmit messages or contract, they open the calcium channels, and calcium molecules move quickly through the channels, creating an electrical current. In nerve cells, that current is what sends messages from cell to cell. In heart muscle cells, that signal allows for a coordinated contraction among thousands of cells, which causes a heartbeat. In the cells with the gene mutation found in the SUDC children, however, calcium channels open more slowly, thus prolonging the time that the cells have current running through them. That can lead to irregular heart rhythms or the heart stopping suddenly in heart muscle cells and has been linked to seizure activity in nerve cells. The reason this is so exciting is if there is a genetic link, we might be able to avoid or even stop the problem. Kids could be screened for those mutations and be placed on special monitors, especially while they are sleeping, 91% of SUDC deaths occur during sleep. With monitoring, if those kids with a life-threatening arrhythmia or seizure, parents can be alerted in time to start life-saving efforts and seek medical attention. The research into calcium channel function could also lead to preventative medications that increase the speed of calcium channel opening in these kids. Research scientists might even be able to find a cure where we stop the problem altogether. Some of the worst days I can remember throughout my career have been related to SIDS and SUDC because it is so devastating to everyone concerned. It feels so senseless when there is just no reason that anyone can come up with what caused that little person to die. That we might be close to finding out a reason for SUDC, and with that, a solution is beyond exciting. It is miraculous.
This is Jane reading for the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Wednesday, March 2nd, from the Health and Wellness section. This is Jane reading for the Midland Reporter-Telegram, on Wednesday, March 2nd, from the Health and Wellness section. Pro-parent tip. Helping when teenagers act out. Most parents are familiar with toddler tantrums. We expect this type of behavior and recognize that these little humans don't have full control of their emotions or the ability to communicate how they are feeling. However, when teens have tantrums or act in ways out of the norm, parents may feel anger, confusion, or frustration. The truth is, though, their bodies have grown and they understand much more about how the world works. Most teens have not mastered the ability to communicate their feelings and regulate their emotions. With their ever-changing hormones and creating surges of testosterone and estrogen, teens are often left feeling completely out of control of their own thoughts and emotions. Because they have a lack of understanding about what is happening inside their brains and bodies, they shy away from opening up to adults about the underlying issues they are wrestling with. At times, they may feel shameful or confused about these feelings. These challenges can lead to teens shutting down or acting out. When you notice these behaviors, the most important thing to do is to get curious. Rather than responding with your own frustration, fear, or anger about their behavior, take some time, days or weeks if needed, to observe. Try to evaluate all the external factors that might be at play. Notice how these behaviors shift across periods of time and are impacted by various people or events. Once you feel that you have some information about the variables at play, sit down with your teen for a consultation to learn more from the teen about their own perspective. The goal is not to accuse, blame, or reprimand. The goal is to get as much information as possible through empathetic listening to help guide the teen through their current challenges. Help them understand the situation from a broader perspective so they can begin regulating their own behavior and making decisions that will be more beneficial for them. Use phrases such as, "I've noticed," "Help me to understand," and "I'd like to help you see it from all angles." Open the door for a dialogue to build trust and provide guidance. As a parent, this can feel challenging. If we feel disrespected by our teen, it may trigger our internal alarm telling us we need to get control. But teens are developmentally programmed to seek their independence as they form their own identities, strengthen their own personal opinions, and are given responsibility to make decisions on their own. Attempts at control only exacerbate the problem by creating more division and less trust, reducing our opportunity to guide and mentor. If our ultimate goal is for our teens to grow into fully independent adults, our approach must match this desire. This is why consultations or team meetings should be aimed at helping them process their experiences with more understanding and personal social control so that they can make healthy and wise choices that benefit themselves and others around them. This is Jane reading for the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Wednesday, March 2nd from the Health and Wellness section. Poll: pandemic fears fade along with Omicron. Worries about infection dip among vaccinated and unvaccinated. Omicron is fading away, and so are Americans' worries about COVID-19. As coronavirus pandemic case numbers, hospitalizations, and deaths continue to plummet, fewer people now than in January say they are concerned that they will be infected after the rise and fall of the wildly contagious virus variant, according to a new poll from the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research. Just 24% say they are extremely or very worried about themselves or a family member contracting COVID-19, down from 36% in both December and January, when Omicron caused a massive spike in infections and taxed public health systems. Another 34% say they are somewhat worried. More than 140,000 deaths in the U.S. have been attributed to COVID-19 since Omicron became the dominant strain of the virus in mid-December. In Lincoln, Nebraska, trucking dispatcher Erica Martinez said she let down her guard last summer before the deadly variant took hold. Then she stopped doing a lot of the social stuff. When cases of Delta spiked again during the successive waves of Delta and Omicron. Now with numbers falling rapidly, she said she is more comfortable about socializing than she has been in months. "I feel like the country is desperately trying to recover from the past 2 years," Martinez, who is 36, said. "I think there will always be new variants popping up left and right. I think, sadly, this is going to be the new norm for society, with people taking fewer and more precautions as cases ebb and flow." Most Americans think the virus will stick around as a mild illness, according to a January AP NORC poll. Just 15% think COVID-19 will largely be eliminated when the pandemic is over. Signs the nation is ready to move on from the biggest COVID-19 wave to date are everywhere. Statewide mask mandates have all but disappeared, and on Friday, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said it's no longer recommending indoor masking for most Americans based on current data. Cities are lifting vaccine requirements to enter bars, restaurants, and entertainment venues. Companies are bringing workers back to the office. California said it's taking an endemic approach to the virus that leans on prevention and swift containment of outbreaks. "I think it's reasonable and appropriate for people to live their lives a little more as the risk of infection goes down, but to do it in a way that recognizes that at some point we're going to have another wave," said Dr. David Dowdy, an epidemiologist at the Johns Hopkins Bloomerang School of Public Health. "And we're going to need to be willing to buckle down just a little bit in the future." Worries about infection have dipped among both vaccinated and unvaccinated Americans. Still, roughly two-thirds of vaccinated Americans say they are at least somewhat worried about COVID-19 infection. About 4 in 10 unvaccinated Americans say the same.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.